Storia Gloriosa, Proud History, the Grand Prix of Italy at the Autodromo Nazionale Monza. The 12th round of the season takes place at the second oldest permanent circuit, a high-speed track that is the engineer's benchmark, a Grand Prix that is the home of the Tifosi, and an iconic race in which the winner's trophy is the driver's benchmark. To win here, in the cradle of Ferrari, is no doubt a proud bit of history for the constructor and the piloto. Vettel's already made history here with Red Bulls in his first win. Will the Tifosi gather under the podium be singing That's Amore, or will they be singing a different tune? Stay tuned, ascoltatori. This is your F1 Regina Desiree, and this is your F1 Weekly Italian Grand Prix Racecast. Ciao.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 636, September 15th, 2013. Nasser?
This edition of F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by Martini & Rossi, bringing you fine sparkling vino and liveries in motor racing, or as the natives would say, automobilismo.
Thank you, Nas. On today's program, why have Ferrari put two cocks in the henhouse? Will Red Bull dominance damage the sport? Lotus F1 sells off 35%. To Infinity Racing, and what do we see in that? And of course, we've got Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid. We've got the Pita Braggio Report, of course, president of F1Weekly.com European Operations. We've got Tech Talk with Tim. I'm telling you, it's a busy goodie bag. And of course, I want to mention next week's special podcast, Podcast 637, with a chat with Peter Windsor, and of course, we're talking the conversation of the year. Nasser Hamid scores the big one. So, welcome to the studio, Nas. How are you?
Very good, sir. Very good. Thank you. Hope all is well with all the familia worldwide. The return of Raikkonen. What say you?
Unbelievable. Shocking is what I want to know. And let's not forget, Montezemolo himself said he didn't want two cocks in the henhouse. What has changed in Italy? Do you call this spaghetti engineering at its highest?
Something is happening here. This is strangulation by spaghetti, I would say. Luca is bringing back the man he paid about $20 million not to drive for him. So I don't know what's going on. He has already in his stable a prancing horse, also known as a prancing Il Leone. Of course, I'm talking about your Dios Mios, Signor Nando. And, you know, this may turn out to be the case of be careful what you wish for just might come true, because we have seen this movie before in the year Kimi won the championship for Luca, and that movie was rated R as in rattle. And I tell you, if Kimi keeps on going like his Lotus and McLaren days, he might be on the Bob Marley program halfway through the 2014 season singing, "I shot the sheriff, but I did not shoot the deputy." The Spanish media might want to bring Kimi in guilty for killing the golden goose, a cannon that lately has went quite loose.
Outstanding, Nas. Great commentary. Yet, I think you're right. This could be a mistake by Kimi's management. But on the other hand, maybe Montezemolo invested into a large Spumanti company and now has a lot of ice cream that he's got to get rid of.
That is also very true. And we all know Italians love gelato. But, you know, I just don't know how to look at this situation. I mean, they already have a guy who, except for a few small mistakes here or there, could have won a couple of championships with Ferrari. I don't know if they're trying to motivate him. I do know these type of contracts take a long time, so it's not something that last week he decided, I'm going to hire Kimi Raikkonen. But maybe they thought, you know, I think where they're hurting is points from the second driver. And, you know, points, each point is worth a lot of money. And if Kimi can score 25, 30 points more, that's millions and millions of dollars in the Ferrari bank account. So maybe that was the motivation. I think Nando is a complete professional like Schumacher and some other top-line drivers. I don't think he needs any. His motivation is when the green light goes on or the red lights go off, that's his motivation. So I don't think they are bringing him to put a fight under his culo. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, but I think it will be helpful to Fernando, as Mark Webber said earlier this week, that will push him to become even better and more machismo. The biggest problem I have is, what if Ferrari is even worse in 2014? What if their V6 turbo is stinko, and again the package is still not up to Red Bull Adrian Newey standards? This is meaningless because we know Raikkonen wants to simply win races. He doesn't know who with or what team. He doesn't care. He just wants to win Grand Prix and championships. And Ferrari, once again, could be very, very disappointing next year. I'm disappointed that they didn't pick up on Gary Anderson and let that slip to Williams. Some things shock me. And once again, Kimi Raikkonen, certainly he does like the long dollar. But still, we never know what's going to happen.
That is very true. And, if for long haul, obviously he is not their man. I was hoping they'll pick up somebody like Nico Hülkenberg. But let's see how it pans out. I mean, this is going to be a very, very exciting 2014 season. And the thing is, you know, whether their package is competitive or not, the world of motor racing, the fans like you and I, will be watching how this, what you're calling cockfight, turns out.
Absolutely, and you're right, 2014 is going to be an exciting season, and with Red Bull's dominance in 2013, they've obviously got this championship in the bag. Once again, they're qualifying in Monza, they lock out the front row, nothing is stopping these people. And do you believe that a lot of audience is going to start losing interests, similar to the Schumacher years dominating, and all waiting for 2014 because they've got something to look forward to with Kimi and Fernando?
You know, that's what they used to say when Schumacher was winning a lot of races. Formula One is still very popular. And that was the argument that used to make, you know, that to make popular Formula One in the U.S., you have to have American drivers and American races. Well, a lot of time has gone by when there was no American driver, no American race here. But, you know, fans here in this country who are quite a few in numbers, I don't think they've lost any interest. So maybe some casual fans will depart, but new people also come in. So I don't think Formula One is going to go off to the back pages of bbc.co.uk or anything like that.
That's true. No, and I don't expect that to happen. But still, we'll see what happens. I think people, you know, with the jeering and the boos that Sebastian Vettel was getting on the podium at Monza, I mean, I know it's the Tifosi, I know he was in Italy, but still, he was getting booed at other races as well, but not as strongly. So I think we are going into a period.
I think that's more of a fallout from Multi 2-1.
Exactly. Keep up the good work, Nas. I also want to mention, before I get into Monza qualifying, that Nasser and I got to preview the movie Rush by Opie, or also known as Ron Howard. Quick comments about Rush. I thought it was outstanding.
Well, it certainly brought back a lot of memories. It was good to see drivers representing not just Niki Lauda. By the way, the guy who did the role of Niki Lauda, that was like talking to Niki Lauda himself.
Absolutely.
Very, very nicely done. And the other guy also did a very good job. But like I said, you know, to see guys depicting Patrick Depailler and other people, I think it was the Simon Taylor commentary they were using, and he used to be the BBC reporter back in those days, and now he's editor of Motorsport magazine. So it has a lot of history there, and it was very fascinating. And I will recommend people go and check it out.
Yes, I thought it was very, very good. As you said, the young man who plays Niki Lauda really, really does an outstanding job. James Hunt, of course, was played by, I will call him Thor, because that is his previous part, and I believe there's another Thor coming out, did a great job as well with James Hunt. The whole movie, I think, chronologically is well done, and it was such an exciting season in 1976. They didn't really need to embellish anything. It's actually quite factual, and I thought the good part, it starts out in the early formulae of F3 and F2 and what was going on with the beginning of the fight between James Hunt and Niki Lauda. I thought it was a great film, well produced. A little bit too much CGI, but that's life. Some of these tracks have been upgraded so much that they don't look like they did back in the 60s and 70s. But still, I highly recommend this film. And the beginning of the movie, you could tell that Ron Howard had gone to the college of John Frankenheimer of Grand Prix 1967, the way they had the screenshots right on the rear exhaust of the Formula One cars, the exhaust coming out, some of the graphics with the pistons going up and down and the valves going up and down was wonderful.
It was very nice, and you're right, it had shades of Grand Prix. And for more expert review on it, please check out Dr. Mark's posting on the forum, F1 Weekly Forum.
Exactly. Keep up the good work, Nass. So anyway, let's go to Monza, because let's not forget, with all this Kimi news and Ferrari and Fernando and Rush, we had a race.
Yes, and a mighty fine one.
An exciting race, and certainly where everyone hopes for Ferrari to win, but still, once again, shocking stuff with Red Bull continuing to dominate qualifying. This time, we didn't have Lewis Hamilton on pole this time. Lewis Hamilton had a disastrous qualifying, not even getting out of Q2.
Yeah, and, you know, there was so much talk that this track will not suit Monza. And I just had an inkling, you know, the Red Bull package, the people, Adrian Newey, no matter what track they go, they're going to do some tweaks to make sure that the young driver they have, whippersnapper, is either on the front row or, you know, not far behind.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was interesting. We had a little bit of rain that started at the beginning of qualifying, just a hair, but it wasn't very much. Didn't really make a big difference. I was hoping we would get rain on the race.
Well, Nico Hülkenberg, third place, was very impressive.
And that was really the talk of the town for that weekend.
Yeah, and if you recall, you know, sometimes when a team gets a package together, a team that has not been doing very well, normally both the drivers do well. When Sebastian won pole position with Toro Rosso for his first win at Monza, you know, in that qualifying, Sebastian Bourdais had also done very well. So for Nico Hülkenberg to be on third, and the pace he kept throughout the race compared to his teammate Esteban Gutierrez, that was really, really super impressive.
Absolutely. And what do you think is going to happen to Esteban by the end of this season? Because really, Hülkenberg is dominating.
Well, there's no comparison. And I really thought that second half of the season, Esteban will catch up. But obviously, it's not happening. But I really think, you know, I firmly believe in this, Carl. Clark, we've seen this with Romain Grosjean and Nico Hülkenberg himself, even with Pastor Maldonado. If you have the talent, you just need some time to, you know, gel and get going. And obviously, in the case of Esteban, it's taking a little bit more time than we thought. And I think that with Nico Hülkenberg most probably going to Lotus and this Russian kid, who I think is quick but is lacking in experience, 2014, most probably Esteban will stay with Sauber because of the Telmex sponsorship. If he has Sergei Sirotkin as a teammate, he will be racing without the pressure of catching up my teammate. And that's the worst thing you can do, you know. I mean, it's a necessary evil anyway. But I'm holding out on hope for Esteban for next year also, at least the first half. But if he cannot even get going in the second half of next season, and then it's going to be, you know, maybe time to come to Champ Cars or Indy Cars or whatever they're called.
I agree. No, Esteban Gutierrez was out in Q1 along with Valtteri Bottas, which I was disappointed with. Valtteri Bottas needs to out-qualify Pastor Maldonado.
Now, that's another kid who is very, very talented and just needs to be in a decent... I think if you put him in a... He will be very good at Lotus. But this is another kid that I'm very high on. And again, if you don't have the package, you're not going to deliver even as a rookie. But the problem, you know, is like... You know, I was talking to Mark Hughes at the Dubai airport early this year, and I asked him, you know, why, and I specifically mentioned Esteban's name and other, you know, whippersnappers, why they can't get going if they are so talented. And he says, you know, A is the serious lack of testing, basically no testing, and with all this tire compound, different tires, this and that, it's just too much to ask to go to a track for a day and learn the new car, new track, new system, new tires. So these people would need a little time, and time is something they don't really give you in Formula One.
No, I totally agree.
They want you to perform right away. And, you know, when you talk to about Toro Rosso, they can say, hey, Sebastian Vettel was able to perform, so why should we give other people 10 weeks? And we'll talk on this a little bit later in the show.
Of course, of course. Also, both Caterhams were out, and Marussia, both of them were out as well, with Bianchi and Max Chilton. The other stunner for me was Kimi Raikkonen getting stuck in Q2. He was blaming their strategy. I'm not sure what was going on there, but Kimi Raikkonen stuck in Q2, so is Romain Grosjean, and so is Lewis Hamilton. We would expect Sutil and Paul DeRista at such a fast track, similar to Spa, to perform well, but they didn't. They were out in Q2. What's going on?
I don't know what's going on. And as far as Hamilton, that was a big surprise, because he was the winner of the race last year in a pretty commanding style. So that really kind of surprised me. But this is pretty much the standard with Lewis Hamilton. Either he screws up or the team screws up, and then it just affects his whole, you know, championship. But this year he doesn't have to worry about the championship. It's pretty much prepackaged.
Yes, he said it was prepackaged, and he took it back because he didn't want to lose motivation.
Yes, there you go.
Yes, thank you very much. And speaking of motivation, we'll talk about him later on, but I was surprised to see him in Italy.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it was outstanding.
Well, you know, he is Italian by blood.
I know.
A Siciliano.
Yes, exactly. And, of course, another great job by Daniel Ricciardo, and including Jean-Éric Vergne. The Toro Rosso does well at Monza.
Yeah, both these drivers are very good. Both these drivers, and I think they will have very good career. The only thing that can create a problem for DR is that, you know, who is the teammate? The same old story.
Yes. Well, he's at least he's young, and it's time for him to get exposed to a little cage rattling.
Yeah,
it's good for the morale.
Yeah, it's going to be a wake up call either for him or for Sebastian Vettel. We'll see. Time will tell.
Absolutely. So, like you said, Vettel on pole, Mark Webber on the front row as well. Lockout for Red Bull. Nico Hülkenberg, P3. Felipe Massa outqualifies Fernando Nasser.
Well, that was impressive. That was very impressive.
It was very impressive. Not only that, but he does a lot of interviews afterwards, and where he says, you know, he's still hoping to stay at Ferrari. And that whole thing exploded, didn't it, Nasser?
Yeah, you know, I tell you, he's hoping to stay in Formula One now. And I'm told his manager, Nicola Todd, has already approached Lotus. And Sauber could be the only other serious option, but they have signed in sponsored drivers. We've already talked about them for 2014. But as far as Massa is concerned, I hope he goes out gracefully like Mark Webber. Many will remember Massa as a moral champion of 2008. And the humility and class he showed at the season finale on home soil will always be remembered by racing fans. But also, you know, they were trying to have him give some toe to Nando in qualifying, and Nando
was a bit critical of it.
Yeah, he was showing a little frustration. He said, we are too far away and this and that. But, you know, the Massa Alonso party is coming to an end, so let's just hope they don't do something silly to each other or say something nasty.
I agree. But still, Massa will finish out the season, and we'll see what he does afterwards. I have some thoughts later on in the program, because I know where he's going to show up one day. Anyway.
are we talking about, let's say, Long Beach Grand Prix?
It could be.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
He could be talking to Rubinho.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
The Brazilian stable is pretty big in the U.S. racing circuit.
Yes. Fernando Alonso in fifth, Nico Rosberg sixth. So both Mercedes, they're supposed to be so fast in qualifying, they lost a little of their je ne sais quoi. Sergio Perez out-qualifying his teammate, Jenson Button, and of course Jean-Éric Vergne in the top 10. So I thought it was a great qualifying, but no big surprises.
Yes.
So there you have it, NASA. Very exciting stuff. And I do want to mention that I think Nigel Stepney has already been hired. No, not Nigel Stepney. You know, I get all these people mixed up.
Rob Schmedley,
yes. I believe he's been hired by Williams.
Is that the new...
That's our our focal point now.
Okay.
So there you have it, Nas. Keep up the good work. Anyway...
Does that mean Massa follow him? Or is the other way around?
They're pretty close together. Yeah. You know, Massa could go... You know, Valtteri Bottas, if he continues to not dominate, even though the package is terrible, if he doesn't bring enough money, Massa could go over there. And you never know, Massa could scrounge up some Brazilian sponsorship.
No, I think Bottas will stay in Formula One, most probably at Williams, because, you know, his management team includes Toto Wolff.
Correct.
And Toto Wolff, as Susie Wolff will tell you, has a lot of bucks. So I think he'll be there.
Excellent. Anyway, so any last thoughts on qualifying, Nasser?
No, sir. I was these days, you know, with all that reliability, especially if you have Sebastian Vettel on pole, you know who's going to win the race. So for me, the race was pretty much decided. It was just a matter of how much other people could do. Now, if LCH was on the front row, it would be maybe some chance.
I agree. Let's go to race day. Beautiful day at Monza. I sort of wish I was there.
Really?
Yeah. I was tearing up a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to be there too, but, you know, live TV at 5 in the morning is not all that bad.
I understand, man. I have to admit, man, you went to spa, so you had gotten some therapy, basically.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yes. No, but a beautiful day at Monza, fantastic crowd, very electric. It never gets better than this, does it?
Well, it's just like Silverstone, you know, you are in the deep depth of motorsports, you know, and talking of deep depth, I'm very happy that the Mexican Grand Prix is coming back and Charlie Whiting was in Mexico City. Now, there's a lot of history with that track with Ricardo Rodriguez and some fantastic races. Dan Gurney won there, and I will never forget the race Senna had and did not come in for a tire stop, which was till too late, and the incredible, outstanding pass Nigel Mansell made on Gerhard Berger. So I would like to go to Mexico.
Yes,
the race is there.
But to be honest with you, I don't believe Mexico will be ready by 2014. It's just not enough time. There's a lot to do.
Yeah, but you know, there's no shortage of people in Mexico, and if you throw enough money, things can be done. I mean, you look at highways when they repair highways here at night.
Well, and don't forget Texas. They built that stadium pretty quickly, but they're Texans.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have the siesta in the afternoon, and you know, I'm still thinking it's not going to happen.
No, I think if they really want to make it happen, it can happen.
Okay.
The track is all there. I think what they would really need, there's a lot of seating capacity. It may not be Bernie's high standards. The seating capacity is there. I think the main issue would be the resurfacing the track. It was always a bumpy track, and safety meet the F1 safety standards.
Yes, so. And of course the paddock penthouse, you know, that has to meet Bernie's standards. In other words, you know, the golden toilet seat and all that stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, there are some facilities already in Formula One that do not meet his high standards. And so another one is not. I mean, they can give them some time, like they did with Silverstone, to catch up. So I'm hopeful. I'm trying to be optimistic that there will be a Gran Premio in Mexico so I can go.
I understand, but we don't even have a Grand Prix in France.
Yeah, well, that's so sad.
That is so sad.
Yeah, but, you know, Monte Carlo is pretty much
a race for the
free.
That's true. I
agree. Yeah, you know. So how far is the Spa from there? And they speak Francais there anyway.
I know. So you're telling me that...
You know, funny, we're talking about Belgium. I was just watching Travel. You know, this guy, Rick Steves, does travel.
He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, mine too. And they were talking about trips to Brussels. And they were showing this Belgian guy making fries. And he said it like three times. Fries were invented in Belgium, not France.
Oh,
so, Yeah.
Okay, so are we done here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, keep up the good work. Anyway, an exciting race, a fantastic start, and an exciting start, except for one person, Paul DeRista. That was a big bummer.
Yes, it was. I was expecting him to do well and also Force India team. But, well, you know, well, these things are happening every now and then.
Yeah. No, but it was a perfect start for the lights go out, perfect start for Sebastian Vettel. I mean, he's already taking a lead by lap one.
No, but I'll tell you, his start was not all that strong because he was pretty much flanked by two other drivers. But what did impress me, what did not surprise me from him, how he late braked and kept the lead. That was very impressive.
I thought that late break and flat spotting that tire, I mean, he managed that tire really, really well. Yeah. You know, there was a lot of vibration in the steering wheel, and that was impressive driving.
Well, there's a reason only one of their drivers is winning the championships, and, you know, these are the small things that will make a difference.
Yes, and of course, a great start from Felipe Massa. Yeah. A great start, a little too late in the season for him. That didn't save his testicular fortitude.
Yeah.
But great start for Felipe Massa, who blasts into second place and even had a stab at the lead in turn one, but no way, Jose. Also a great start from Fernando Alonso. I thought it was exciting. And we had Sebastian Vettel, Felipe Massa, Fernando Alonso, who really, it was a brilliant start from him. Once again, Mark Webber, famous for bad starts, but he was able to get fourth. I mean, can you believe that? Front row, and he's fourth.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, with him being on front row, I thought this would be a good opportunity for him. And if he ever gets this opportunity, he's going to show no mercy to do a reverse multi 2-1, especially with LCH and Kimi qualifying further down the grid.
It's very possible. Lewis Hamilton, he started bouncing around on the curbs, as did Jenson Button at the first chicane. Paul DeRista crashes out, as I mentioned. A great overtaking move by Fernando Alonso on Mark Webber at the second chicane. That was pretty impressive. You could tell that Fernando was already thinking, I have got to keep this championship hope alive. I've got to win at Monza in front of the Tifosi. Because if I can you imagine? That elevates him right above the Pope. It's Fernando, the Pope, and then Montezemolo.
Wow.
I know. It's exciting. But that didn't happen either. So, what'd you think about the Pope getting that little Renault?
Well, you know, that's...
Instead of a Fiat. What's going on there, Ness?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Lap 4, Sebastian Vettel sets the fastest lap of the race. Extends his lead to 1.6 seconds. Sergio Perez and Kimi Raikkonen have a little on the... So that was disappointing. Raikkonen had to come in for a new nose. Raikkonen not having a great weekend.
Yeah, it was not the day for him,
and
that's
what's,
for sure.
You know why? He was already thinking about the gelato, you know, the new little villa in Maranello and Las Mujeres. It's all very fascinating because he knew he was signed at Ferrari when he raced at this race.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, I'll tell you something. I tell you, at the Spa, I told you, I asked Steve Robertson, you know, when is then? He said, you know, pretty soon. Before, he said, by Singapore. I'll tell you what happened before that. There's a team in Formula Renault, Koiranen Brothers. They also run a team in GP3. Koiranen Brothers, they are Finnish people. And I was outside the GP2 paddock here, I mean, the hospitality area. And I saw these team members of Koiranen with the uniform and all that. And then some guy came with a big smile and they were high-fiving and the two of them went to the other side to talk. And then it dawned on me, oh, the guy who came is Steve Robertson. So I think they knew what was going on even at Spa.
Yeah. No, I believe that. That makes perfect sense. Lap 6, bad news for Lewis Hamilton. His team informs him that he can't hear the radio. And that is going to make his afternoon a bit troublesome. Lap 7, Hamilton is under pressure from Jenson Button, his old partner in Boudreau.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those are the days. Fernando Alonso on lap 8 passes Felipe Massa. Shocking, huh?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, it remains to be seen in the early half of next season.
If Kimi...
Yeah.
Relinquishes.
Yeah. You know, he's already told one team, leave me alone. I know what I'm doing. he's going to be pretty much like Robbie Gordon's, you know, when people would complain he's hard to pass. And his thing was, hey, if you're faster than me, just pass me.
It's exciting.
It's coming.
I know. Lap 8, the gap between Fernando Alonso, who passed Felipe, and Vettel is 3.6 seconds. On lap 11, they announced that the Romain Grosjean-Paul Derussa incident will be investigated after the race, which is nice. I like after-the-race investigations. Why ruin Romain's day? So these are the kind of things I like. Lap 13, Lewis Hamilton's got a message as he peels into the pits for a fresh set of Pirellis. Very exciting. Kimi Raikkonen is now, you know, way in the back on lap 14, is trying to muscle his way through the field. And Mark Webber is dealing with Felipe Massa, starting to close in on P4. Pretty good race, but you know, by now, I figure, without a Kablamo, what happened to the alternator problems, right, Nasser?
Well, they had brake problems also.
They did have brake problems, and they had gearbox problems. He had the short shift a number of times, but that just doesn't seem to break the car.
Issues have been resolved.
And you know, Fernando, he didn't even just go to the chapel, the DNF chapel. He went directly to Vatican.
Oh, wow.
Yes, he wanted the full power. Turbocharged.
The question I have, did he dial 666 and ask for a strike on Kimi?
It's very possible. Yeah. They have that program over there. It's brutal, but it's tough. Anyway, lap 18, Lewis Hamilton is currently 16th, 6 seconds adrift of Kimi Raikkonen, who has just set the fastest lap. Sebastian Vettel, meanwhile, 6.5 seconds ahead of Fernando. Building the gap. We know what's going on here. And a lot of people, I know a lot of people complain that this race began to get a little monotonous and boring. But we here have a philosophy that if it's Formula One, it's never boring.
No, it's never boring. And that's why I think everybody should at least once in their lifetime attend a Formula One race. So see what happens when I watch a Formula One race, Clark, especially of a track I've been to. Monza is one of them. It's just when the cars are coming down or racing down a straight or whatever, I just visualize the speed and the sound. The sound is really what gets me. So as long as I have that concept of sound, I'm enjoying a Formula One race.
It's the best. Let's hope those V6s sound good, too.
They will.
Yeah. On lap 21, Fernando Alonso is now closing the gap on Vettel. And the gap is down to 5.6 seconds. But I think Sebastian Vettel was just relaxing a little bit.
A walk in the park for him.
Pretty much. Lap 23, Perez and Daniel Ricciardo both pit. Lap 25, Felipe Massa pits. And he comes out behind Mark Webber, so his chance of finishing on the podium with his best friend Fernando is just not going to happen. Vettel pits, and Fernando Alonso leads, but Vettel has just lapped 1 second quicker than the Ferrari driver on the last lap before lap 26, and that's good news for Vettel, and not so good news for our Espanol friend. Big bummer. Lap 28, Red Bull boss Christian Horner reports that his team are not expecting any more rain. I know what they're expecting. Fourth World Championship. He's already thinking about that. He knows this one's in the bag. It's done. He's looking at his bonus. He's already planning vacations in December.
I'm going to tell you what they're really planning on.
What's that?
They're planning to win the first championship of the turbo season.
You believe that?
Yeah, and then it'll be 5-5.
Well, the biggest problem is a lot of people are hoping that Renault doesn't have a good V6 turbo.
You know, everybody's talking about that Mercedes has the top-line engine, Mercedes has the best engine, Mercedes has the best power. And Renault, you know, they have a lot of experience with turbo engines, so I don't think they will have a slug.
Well, not only that, but the box, see, I look at it, the rules are so tight now and complex that it's really a box, and your motor has to fit in that box. And these days, with these rules, the Mercedes, the Renault, the Ferrari are going to be all extremely similar. Yeah. That's just the nature of the game.
Yeah, and same tires. I think it's going to come down to aerodynamics. And, of course, men behind the machine.
Absolutely. Well, of course. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, once again, that's why Kimi at Ferrari is going to be fantastic. Lap 36, Nico Rosberg outbreaks himself in the rundown to turn one in the pursuit of Nico Hülkenberg, who's really doing an outstanding job in this race. You know, sometimes they qualify in the top five and they lose total control.
Yeah.
Obviously, his professionalism is peaking.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, all you have to do is look at previous achievements, and this thing should not surprise. And, you know, what will be really telling is if he was to be put in a good team or a whatever team that's a little bit more competitive, and he is teammate to a Raikkonen or a LCH, and then we're going to find out how good he really is.
Absolutely. Lap 39, Romain Grosjean does a nice pass on his friend Sergio Perez in turn one for the last point. 10th place, that is. Lap 40, Mark Webber continues to chase Fernando Alonso, but he just can't make it happen. Fernando is machismo, and Mark knows it. Lap 41, Mark Webber is told there is a problem with the car and that he needs to short shift. Meanwhile, Lewis Hamilton sets the fastest lap of the race in the 14th position. Lap 44, Kimi Raikkonen passes Adrian Sutil through Parabolica for 11th. This allows Lewis Hamilton to close on the Force India, but it's not enough to launch a move into the final corner. Romain Grosjean passes Bouton for 8th place, which I thought was good. Get those points, Romain. You're not a dumb fellow. Lap 47, Felipe Massa has started now to close in on Mark Webber. Can he do it? Can he stick it? Can he do it? Because he knows the Tifosi really don't like him anymore. It's done. It's, you know, it's cooked. Lap 48, Kimi Raikkonen has been told to use curves out of Parabolica because it will flatten, to not use curves out of Parabolica because it will flatten the battery. But, you know, trying to tell Kimi Raikkonen anything.
Huh. Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. Lap 50, Lewis Hamilton makes short work of Sergio Perez, goes chop, 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 and sends him an in-flight burrito. Lap 52, McLaren are in danger of not scoring any points this afternoon on the 50th anniversary. And, of course, the 50th anniversary of McLaren. I'm telling you, I mean, they're blowing this out of the park. There is more. I mean, I get more emails from McLaren these days than anybody else, trying to get me to buy T-shirts, tote bags, stickers. It's unbelievable. What a marketing campaign. I hope it works out for them. Guess who wins this race, Nasser?
Let me guess. I'm one of the Red Bull drivers?
Yes. Sebastian Vettel.
Oh, wow.
Hard-fought podium by Fernando. An outstanding job. I mean, it was great.
Yeah. A victory is number 6 of the season for our good friend, Bastian, extending his championship lead to 53 points. Third man in the championship, LCH, has initially given up on title hopes, but then he retracted. But I think he was factual in his first statement. So it's all down to Fernando, and he can hear drums of Red Bull celebration of 4 in a row. Niki Lauda is even predicting Seb will be sailing to his 4th title at Yas Marina, and who can argue with that? Vettel made his F1 debut 6 years after Nando. Today, both have 32 wins, putting them 4th on the all-time list, which is unbelievable.
Absolutely.
Both made their mark in what was Minardi, and Monza was the venue in the rain for Bastian in 2008 when he won his first F1 race in slippery condition, which remains the first and the only win for Toro Rosso. Now, let's hear from your man, your Dios, Padre Nando, what he had to say.
A case of just not being able to match Vettel's pace today.
Yeah, I'm happy. We tried to stay long in the first stint just to have a little bit of fresh hard tires for the last part of the race in case we were close to Sebastian. We didn't have that opportunity, but it was good also to defend from Mark. And happy. The weekend was good. Yesterday, top 5 for both Ferraris. That was a very good qualifying for us. And today, fighting with the Red Bulls for the podium. As I said, nearly perfect, nearly, because Sebastian won again and increased the lead championship. But he dominated Friday, Saturday and Sunday, so we just need to congratulate him. This is a sport, and someone did better than us today.
And as far as our Australian mate Webber is concerned, like he's mean, I said the other day, I hope he goes out with a win. But more important is to go out with grace and class. And I really do not want to see any something going wrong between him and Sebastian, both on and off the track. And over the years, you know, Mark has worked very hard to be where he is, won quite a few races, and very importantly, under respect of fellow F1 drivers and team owners. And this was his first podium at Monza. Looking into the future, we all agree that Mr. Hülkenberg, Herr Hülkenberg, would be a star of the future, and we wish him all the best. And he was very excited after his race. So this is what he had to say.
Be that strong, especially in the final stint in the last 15 laps, where I really catched up with the Ferraris and Red Bulls in front there, I was quite surprised. But it wasn't an easy race. It was quite hard and challenging from Nico behind. He didn't leave me alone at all, so I wasn't allowed to make any mistake, and he really kept me busy.
Question for you now, sir. I have a little made some notes here between racing life of Ferrari teammates for 2014. Shall we do that first?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's just knock it out of the park now.
Okay, so, yeah, this is just from some information. You know, the teammates of Ferrari at 2014, Raikkonen. Born in 1979, town called Espoo, Finlandia. Nando, born in 1981, Oviedo, Viva España. F1 debut, both of them, same race, 2001, Australia. Interesting. And Monty also made his debut in this race. First pole for Raikkonen was in the 2003 European Grand Prix at the Nürburgring. And for Nando, it was the 2003 Malaysian Grand Prix, in only his second race for Renault and Flavio. And that race was the first Grand Prix win for Mr. Kimi Raikkonen. And for Nando, the first win came same year in Hungary. Now, you're a music man. You remember the Steely Dan song, "This is the Day of the Expanding Man"?
This is one of my favorite songs.
Oh, answer. Cool. In Budapest, it was the Day of the Expanding Bibendum. Do you remember?
I remember. But you know what? It was legal. Ferrari started to complain. I'm still stuck on that.
Yeah, and they were using that same tire for almost over a season, so that was kind of surprising. Championship won in 2007 for Kimi Raikkonen, winning three of the last four races and removing a 26-point deficit, which was very impressive. Nando, uno, dos. He's stuck on two championships since 2006, but he will go down in the history of motor racing as the man, the hombre who brought down the Red Baron. Grand Prix wins 20 for Kimi, 32 for Nando, podium 75 for Mr. Raikkonen. Now, in terms of teams, Kimi started out with Sauber, went to McLaren, then went to Ferrari, then, you know, was paid a lot of money to go to NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, and now came back with Lotus, and now he'll be with Ferrari. And Nando started with Minardi, Renault, McLaren, 1 year of a 3 year contract only was done. Another story for another day. Then Renault back to Flavio's arms, and then La Ferrari, where he was very, very happy. The top dog till Monza. Now he's on equal footing. And you know what happens when you're on equal footing with a guy who's equally good? What happens?
We have cage rattling.
Yes, and that will begin next season.
Yeah, but don't forget, Jinan Capital needs money, so they sell 35% of Lotus F1 to Infinity Racing.
Yeah, which is one of the head honcho is this Mansoor Ejaz homie. He's an investment guru, and he's very well connected with the U.S. government. He's been involved in a lot of deals, you know, and obviously being in wealth management, serious upscale wealth management, he has a lot of contacts in the Middle East, and let's see what happens there. But my take on all this, on all of this is very simple. Nothing to do with him or Sergei Sirotkin and his familia. And this is a thing I learned a long time ago when I started following motor racing. It goes for teams and drivers and everybody. If you want to go and win in motor racing, you must involve yourself with people who have passion for motor racing. Money will get you there, but it's not going to buy you success. And I think a lot of these people are doing. Do you remember that guy, Alex Schneider, I believe, was the guy, Russian-born Canadian? He brought in what was Jordan team or whatever it was, and they changed the name to Midland. That was a pure business investment. He invested hundreds of million and then sold it. So You know, these things, it's good to have all this money coming in, but they really need some serious investment from people who are really passionate and have staying power and staying desire in motor racing. That's just my opinion.
I agree with that opinion, and a great example is Toyota and their use of Formula One. Got nothing done. But let's not forget, Infiniti is owned by Nissan.
No, dude, this is not that Infiniti.
Are we sure?
Oh yeah, positive. This is Infiniti Racing Partnership, because they're not using Renault engine. This is a different company.
But see, that's what's confusing, because they're calling themselves Infiniti Racing,
but with a Y at the end.
Ah, because we have Infiniti Red Bull.
Yeah, that's I at the end.
That's what I wanted you to clear up.
This has nothing to do
with Nissan or Renault or anything. This is completely. Or Dacia.
Yeah, this is Racing Partnership. And I think he has money from Arabian investors, right, and
but
all that.
I think you're right. The passion might not be working out, and Lotus F1 could be in line for some tough cookies.
You know, Ferrari has taken James Ellison from there,
exactly.
Kimi Raikkonen, and
they're taking all the good stuff.
Yeah,
because they know. No, I totally agree, and we'll see what happens. Please continue.
Okay, major achievement before these two youths came to Formula One, being Raikkonen and Nando. Kimi Raikkonen was 2000 champion in Formula Renault UK 2 liters, 7 wins from 10 races. So this kid bypassed Jeep, whatever there was in those days, F3 Euro Series and Happy Doss, and went straight to Formula One, scoring a point on his debut. And Nando was champion in 1999, what was called Euro Open Series by Nissan. This was also known as World Series by Nissan. And this is what, when Renault bought Nissan, they changed the name to World Series by Renault. And then the previous series was mostly Spanish-based. They made it Continental Europe, which is where Kovalainen and Kubica came from. And Nando had 6 wins from 15 starts and obviously has never stopped to impress no matter what he raced or when he qualified.
Outstanding, Nas. Keep up the good work. We've got motorsports coming up pretty soon. I mean motorsports mondial, that is.
Si, senor.
Maybe we should take a little quick break, or do you have some more statistics?
Well, we can take a short break, enjoy some, Kool-Aid, and then we'll do the we'll have new motivation to live and enjoy life after drinking that, and then we'll do the motorsports mondia.
Excellent, Nasser. Thank you. So we'll be back.
Hello, listeners. This is Tim with Tech Time, and today I have a very special treat. On the line, I have Kevin Hollenbach, an actual race car fabricator with Jeff Burton Autosport, participating in the PASS series, which is a grassroots short track series focused on driver development for NASCAR. Kevin is originally from beautiful Hillsborough, New Jersey, and now lives in Concord, North Carolina. Kevin, welcome to the show, and please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Thanks for having me, Tim. My name is Kevin. Like you said, I'm from Hillsborough, New Jersey, now live in Concord. I joined Jeff Burton Autosport in September as a fabricator and tire guy, and I love it. Living the dream.
Excellent. So, You called yourself the tire guy. Would you mind explaining a little bit about what that means and what your responsibilities are, either in the garage or on a race weekend?
Yeah, I'm in charge of everything that has to do with tires, wheels, at the track, at the shop. I was chosen, Jeff made me to do tires, so at the shop, I maintenance the wheels, make sure they're clean, mark how many laps are on them, so we can use them as later tests for race. It's not like NASCAR Cup Series where you get to the track and the tires are already mounted, ready to go. I have to pick them out. We run a bias class, which really is all about stagger. Stagger's a circumference difference between the left rear and the right rear tire. So I'm in charge of picking out the right tires, getting them mounted, sizing them, making sure the stagger's right in each set. And then during practice, I do tire pressures, keep track of everything, check our wears, make sure we're wearing evenly across every tire. And that's about it at the track. And then the shop, I kind of record data, figure out what the car was doing based on how your tire pressure gains came back at the track. And that's about it.
So you mentioned that you give a lot of attention to tire pressure. So can you explain a little bit about how the tire pressure affects either the performance of the tire, the grip, the wear, various things that are probably very important to a successful race?
Yeah, with a bias bias, like I said, it's all about factors. Getting the car to turn using a bigger right rear tire than left rear. It's like a solo cup. You put it on the ground and you roll it, it's going to roll towards the smallest side. Same thing with their rear tires. So on shorter tracks with narrower turns, we require more bagger to help the car turn itself. On squeezing corners, we run less. So air pressure, I can really adjust with the bias spine to get the bagger we need. I can go more air in the right rear, less air in the left rear for more stagger, or vice versa for less stagger.
So when you show up to a track on a certain weekend, what do you think about when you're choosing these tire pressures?
Based on how sharp a turn is or corner is, it means we either need more stagger or less stagger. So I go back to my notes from similar tracks and kind of get a ballpark where it starts.
Wow.
And then air pressure, we could kind of adjust as we go.
Do you find that in trying to get the stagger correctly set up that there might be other consequences? For example, your outer tire, which has higher pressure, might have a different wear rate than your inner tire?
Actually, yeah. With the more stagger we run, it puts camber in the rear tires. You'll actually wear the rear tire differently than the left rear, and you kind of have to watch that. But the keying with staggers overwhelms the disadvantage of the tire wear.
Huh. So you must be out there watching the TVs or have your binoculars and you're paying very close attention to a specific location on the car to know, you know, you're wearing too fast and you might need to come in for an early pit stop or something like that?
Well, actually, before the tire hits the track, I have a depth gauge and I record how deep the tread is on the tire. There's little holes that go down and with your depth gauge, you can figure out how much rubber is actually on the track of the tire. So after a run, I'll come in, and when the car comes in, I'll clean off the rubber that we picked up, and I'll check the depth again, and then I'll subtract that depth from the original depth, figure out where we're wearing tires, how much we're wearing tires. So that really is how I figure out what our tire wear is.
What is life like on a race weekend for a team member?
It can be crazy. Some races are 2 days, some are actually just 1 day, and then there's some big shows that are actually like a week long.
Wow.
When we first get there, we unload everything, get everything organized, and we have to take parts of the tech, make sure it fits the body template, make sure the weight's correct, and then while they're doing all this, the tire guy's actually down at tires, picking out tires. Get them ready for when the car gets back to the garage or the pit stall. The tires are there ready to go on for practice. During the race, the tire guy is constantly checking tire pressures in the spares or the change set, making sure they're ready to go at a moment's notice. So it's really crazy. It's never ending. So we load up and on the way out.
Well, we wish you the best of luck in your races, and we'll be following your team. And one last question, do you have any special message to the listener?
Yeah, if you're a fan or want to be involved in racing, just go out, support your short track, your big track, no matter what it is, they're racing asphalt, make sure you go out and support the track. If you're wanting to get involved, go talk to people in the pit. They're awesome. That's how I got involved. There's always people, especially at short tracks, looking for help, so don't be afraid to get your hands dirty or whatever. Thanks for having me, Tim.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for being on the show, Kenny.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com, and now, here's the PBR report.
Now it's time for a round of PBR. Mr. Brazier, welcome to your show. How was Jersey in the company of F1 drivers?
I had a great vacation, thanks, Nazir. I spent the week in Jersey. It was was lucky with the weather, had a great vacation, and got back last night.
And you were in the company of some famous F1 drivers, I understand.
Well, I saw Derek Warwick. There was an air show on the Thursday with the fantastic Red Arrows were the star of the show. And as I was walking along the seafront there, I saw Derek Warwick. So he didn't recognise me, which was disappointing. Of course, Nigel Mansell's there now, and he's got a dealership there on the island as well. Well, I didn't bump into our Nige.
Okay. Now, are you ready to serve us some cold, hard facts from the Italian Grand Prix weekend?
Yes, indeed. But I've got one thing to mention first. Did you notice that FOM are putting digital advertising on now? I didn't notice it in the broadcast at the time, but it's come up on a couple of the Formula One blogs since. Something worth looking out for. It's quite interesting. They've been overlaying Pirelli and Emirates logos, some others, actually on the track and on the grass runoff areas. It's an interesting development in the way that they're promoting Formula One.
Yes, you have to take care of people who pay the big bucks.
Sure. I've put a link on the forum to one of the blogs that has got an interesting piece on it.
Oh.
So I suggest you take a look on the F1 Weekly forum.
I will certainly do that, and thank you for doing this.
So let's talk about qualifying. Sebastian Vettel became the third driver in Formula One history with at least 40 career poles. It's amazing to think in his short career that he's reached the third. Only Senna at 65 and Michael Schumacher at 68 have taken more poles. It was also the 50th pole for Red Bull, puts them sixth in the all-time list. So that's quite incredible.
Yeah, you know, 40 career poles for a kid who made his debut at Indy in 2007. I mean, that is very, very scary.
He's raking them up at an incredible rate. It was also only the first time that Red Bull locked out the front row at Monza. But it is the 20th time that Vettel and Webber have shared the front row.
Talking of Webber, do you think he will have a win this season? It's looking pretty sad right now, and I don't think Bastian is in the mood. See what happened? I read that at Monza, maybe at Spa, that Webber had a sort of a get-together with some old friends and journalists. I think it was at Monza because it was the last European race in the Red Bull, you know, energy zone, and while everybody was there, Bastian was fiddling with his iPad or iPhone or something down below. He did not even attend that function.
Yeah, it's a shame. Another thing was that McLaren failed to get a car in the top seven at Monza for the first time since 1983, when Niki Lauda was 13th and John Watson was 15th. And you got to remember that last year, they had a 1-2 finish at this race. So it's only been a year.
Yeah, this has been quite a dramatic drop for McLaren, but hopefully they will come back next year.
Yeah. Felipe Massa scored his best qualifying results since Bahrain. He was fourth, and it was also the fourth time this year that he's out-qualified Alonso.
Yeah, I mean, his performance was giving me some idea that, you know, this guy has been told your services are no longer required and is now wants to do the best he can.
Yeah. Go out on a flourish. Toro Rosso, they got both cars in the top 10, and that's the first time they did that since the 2011 Indian Grand Prix.
Hulk is next,
yes. He recorded his second best career starting position. That was after his surprise pole in the wet at Brazil in 2010. It's the seventh time now in history that a Sauber, not a BMW Sauber, but a Sauber, has started in the first three positions.
Okay, now we go to the race. Something important for you.
Yeah, the Vettel may have scored his 300th podium finish for a German driver, which again is quite a statistic. But fortunately, Great Britain still leads with an incredible 584. Amazing statistic.
Yeah, almost twice.
Yeah. So when it comes to point scoring, Vettel's now won. Out of the last four races, he's won three times and finished third. So he's scored 90 points. Alonso, the next one behind him, has scored only 58. And I think that's just telling us how the rest of the season's going to go.
Yeah, especially with all that talk that Monza will not suit Red Bull. So Looks like four in a row is pretty much almost.
It's in the can, isn't it?
Yeah.
This was Vettel's third win at Monza. All of them were from pole, of course, and each of them, coincidentally, with exactly 49 laps each time, just shows how you can be consistent when you have the fastest car and you're in pole position.
Who knows? He might be a San Francisco 49er fan now.
Yeah, something like that. Red Bull's Monza success was its 40th in Formula One. Its first came in China in 2009, which was 85 races ago. That means that the British squad, Red Bull, has won almost every other race, which is quite an incredible running rate.
Very impressive.
Alonso's podium at Monza was his 40th podium finish for Ferrari, and that's out of 70 races. So that's a good running rate.
Unbelievable.
As well.
Unbelievable.
It's also, if you remember, we mentioned that McLaren last year scored a 1-2 last year. So far this season, neither McLaren driver has appeared on the podium. A couple of notes a little bit further down the grid. Jean-Éric Vergne, he's completed the lowest racing mileage of any driver. 1754 miles. Hamilton's next on 2259. The ever-smiling Daniel Ricciardo... equaled his best career result, a seventh, and that equals his seventh in China this year. And finally, it was the 60th straight points finish for Ferrari, the Scuderia closing in on the all-time record of 64, which is currently held by McLaren.
Now I have to ask you a question. This new Ferrari pairing, do you think it's going to work out, or we're going to have an endless season of CR, page rattling?
Well, I think it's going to be a really interesting thing to watch, how that dynamic works. You have to think Fernando Alonso is a little older and a little wiser, and how those two personalities are going to get on. But I guess it's going to be whoever's going to be out front in the points after the first few races is going to take the initiative. And I can't see Alonso not doing that. I mean, they're two very good drivers, but I think when push comes to shove, Fernando Alonso is able to make the best of any situation.
Mr. Brazier, thank you very much for another fine serving of PBR.
Thanks, Nazir.
Peter, thanks again for another outstanding Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the King himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and gelato regards. We shall start with GP2, Hapidos, our favorite. What a difference a month makes. At the start of August, the GP2 championship was looking like a two-horse race between Stefano Coletti and Felipe Nasser. But after Spa and Monza, both are now on the outside looking in. Fabio Limer is the new series leader with 159 points after winning the feature race at Monza on Saturday. Sam Bird started the race from pole and finished second, and that is also his position now in the championship with 153. California driver Alexander Rossi finished 8th in feature race, which gave him reverse grid pole position for Sunday's sprint race, and this takes place early morning. His slow start allowed Adrian Quaife Hobbs to grab the lead at the start, and he went on to win just a second ahead of Rossi. Now, had Rossi won this race, he would have become the first American to win a GP2 race. So I was really hoping, and hopefully he'll get one this before the season is out. Did you get a chance to watch any of the GP2 Acción?
No, so I'm super busy these days, Nasser, so I did not have any opportunity.
And lately, this guy Julian Leal from Colombia has been doing pretty good, and he was third in the feature race. And our man Coletti failed to score, and same was the case with Felipe Nasser. There are two rounds to go in Singapore and Abu Dhabi, and we have new faces at the top of the championship. Limer leading with 159, Bert second 153, Coletti drops to third on 135. Felipe Nasser is fourth on 130 points. Okay, Hapitres, which is the GP3, the baby sister to GP2, this series is also heading for an exciting championship finale. They only have one round remaining at Yas Marina in Abu Dhabi. Russian Red Bull racer Daniel Kvyat won the first race on Saturday over Nicky Lolli of UK. Facundo Regalia of Argentina was third. Jack Harvey from Lincolnshire, England was the winner of race two. Kvyat was second. And ex-Red Bull racer from Scotland, Lewis Williamson, was third. Regalia leads the championship with 138 points over Kvyat, who was second, 7 points behind. Third with 107 points is Kevin Corius from Estonia. Connor Daly is fourth with 104 points. Okay, now since we are recording this show on Sunday, we had some racing action this weekend, so let me just give some results there. MotoGP from Misano Adriatico, Jorge Lorenzo winning over Marc Marquez. Pedrosa was third and Rossi fourth, and this would be Valentino Rossi, of course. Marquez still leads by 34 points over Lorenzo. DTM from Oschersleben, Augusto Farfus of Brazil in a BMW winning over the Audi driver Mike Rockenfeller, who is a local German guy. World Series from Renault, this is what I want to talk about, Dr. Marco, a little bit. They were in Hungaroring. Nico Müller from Switzerland was the winner in race one, and Antonio Felix da Costa was the winner in the second race. Now, what is happening is with da Costa, he was pretty much looking good to get the Toro Rosso side, but Dr. Marco has not been too thrilled with some of his performances. He made a mistake and the team had some issues, but he was really set to win the championship because he did very well last year in some races, and this really puts him back on the track. But right now, it's not a guarantee that he will get the Toro Rosso drive. But let's see what Dr. Marco has to say. NASCAR news, Monty looking for a ride and a Red Robin burger after being dropped by Chip Ganassi. And his place is being taken by Kyle Larson, who's a young kid from L.A., very talented. And there was a lot of reports that Michael Andretti wants Monty in his IndyCar team, but apparently Monty has said that he's not interested or this will not work out. So let's see what happens where Montoya ends up. I would love to see him in IndyCar racing. It will be good for the sport.
Absolutely. I agree. I was hoping he would go to IndyCar racing. Now, what is all the chaos with the Nationwide Series, the Chase, the faked caution, and Waltrip Racing?
Well, you know, Michael Waltrip, the very first race he did with Toyota as a Toyota team, one of the lead Toyota teams, they were busted for using rocket fuel. So coming back in the news on a negative is not very good. Apparently, they had some sort of a radio communication that, you know, come into the pits or do whatever so their guy, Martin Truex, could get into the chase. And NASCAR said, you know, this is not cool, and they did some investigation. And sure enough, there were communications made to two drivers of the team to do things and pit and this and that to allow Martin Truex, and then that cost, I think, Ryan Newman a slot, or one of the drivers a slot in the chase, because they only allow like 12 or 13 drivers. So now they have reversed the positions, and Michael Waltrip's guy is out, Ryan Newman is in. I believe Ryan Newman was the guy. And then also that caution that came affected Jeff Gordon also. So after further review, they have put Jeff Gordon back in the series, which I think is very good for the series. But, well, you know, these things happen. You cannot say this is happening in NASCAR only. But I think NASCAR is doing the right thing. You cannot screw up. I mean, if you want to, you know, there was a Formula One race many, many years ago, and they wanted to start the race. This was a backmarker team. And they knew that they were not going to, there was some problem, car was not going to finish. So, but they had to start the race to get the starting money. This is, we're talking, I think, 70s. So they started the race, and after a lap or two, they just brought in and something failed. But I think to spin on the track, screw up the thing, that's not cool. So I think NASCAR has done the right thing.
Okay. I had to ask because I know what's going on.
Yeah, well, I have an idea. So now we not only have a competition yellow, we also have a fraudulent caution.
A fraudulent caution.
Yeah.
Now that's exciting. See, yeah. we're picking up the terminology a little bit, a little more sophistication.
Yeah. We strive to be the best like NASCAR, so we're trying.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe somebody threw a shoe on the track.
No, that was in Canada. That was in Canada.
I know, but it's exciting.
On Danica Patrick, of all the people.
Yeah. Now, I even heard that Penske was involved in some shenanigans.
Yeah, I have not had a chance to read up on that, but team also came on the radar.
Okay, I'm just checking everything, Nass. Thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. So much going on, yet so little time. Of course, I'll remind our listeners before we begin reading 50 words on the Italian Grand Prix that we have an outstanding interview coming up in podcast number 637. Of course, a chat with Peter Windsor.
It was very nice to talk to him and hear about his early days in Australia, his experiences in motor racing. And of course, I asked him about USF1 and he gave an answer, which is understandable. But, you know, so much we can do. But my many thanks to him and also for our listener, Mr. Philip Pegler, who made this possible. So please don't miss this conversation next week.
Thank you, Nass. And now let's go ahead and read 50 words from the forum. And I'm going to go ahead and start with comments from Ye. Some midfield fights tried to keep it interesting, but really nothing could stop Fritz. Booing at the podium is getting worse.
Okay, next, Sehissan, I believe. Business as usual for their German guy with the overused finger. LCH flies for only part of the race, while the retiring Weber gets a podium for the last time of asking at Monza. Not much to see at the top end of the field then. Anything likely to stop Vettel at this stage? No, I thought not.
From Jackson. Thought Alonso might pull a fast one, but my hopes were for naught. Always great to see the Tifosi's energy at Monza.
Neon Zapper, back marker, drivers fended off top contenders midfield. Massa's performance reeked of pressure to keep his seat and please the home team crowd. Weber graciously proved his retirement is by choice, and once again the kid is 10 seconds ahead of the field. With mostly one box, Pirelli looked pretty good at home.
From Frank Douglasson, dear NBCSN, I know you lot get giddy at the chance to hang out with a legend, but being a legendary F1 driver does not make one a competent race commentator. You should have known how badly that was going to go after the podium in Austin last year. Please don't rubbish up your production in exchange for a fun day for yourselves again. Love the viewers. And, of course, he's talking about Mario Andretti joining Steve Matchett and David Hobbs and Lee Diffie in the commentation booth. I agree somewhat that Mario is a terrific driver, but not a great commentator, not a color guy.
Well, yeah, not everybody is going to be a good commentator. But, you know, respect everybody's opinion, so we don't have a problem with that.
Absolutely.
Okay, finally, we have a few words of wisdom from Dr. Mark. Perilously close to being a yawn of a race at Monza, but once again there were midfield scraps to save the day. Let's hope Renault make a poor engine for 2014.
Uh-oh. Shameful!
Sounds like a finger pointing at the world champion.
Yes, I think you're right.
Past, present, and possibly future.
But I'm afraid that's not going to happen. Renault's V6 turbo is going to be wonderful and explosive.
I think it's going to be strong. I don't see them just draw. I think the team that's really, you know, they have a lot of cars that are using, so they will have a lot of data. Same with Mercedes. But Ferrari, they're going to have themselves and Sauber, so I have some concerns on them. But if they come out with a strong, faster engine, then it can happen. Then that will be good for, but then we're going to have another problem. Who's going to win more races?
Yeah.
I think they will cut each other's throat. If the package is competitive, I don't think these two people are, different animals than what Nando had at McLaren. But I will not be surprised if they take points from each other. I just cannot see Alonso being tall while Kimi has a chance and slow down and let him win. It's not going to happen. Kimi, I think the only person he ever listens to is Man in the Mirror. And so he's not going to take any orders.
I agree. It's going to be exciting. I want to thank everybody who contributes to the forum. Thank you, gentlemen. That was great, Nass. Another outstanding podcast.
Thank you very much, sir. I was thinking this morning, we're closing in on 700 podcasts. It's been quite a while. It's been a fun ride. I hope it goes on for a long time. And none of this would be possible without the support and love of our listeners. So many thanks to them again.
Good point. Thank you, Nasser. And thanks to the listeners. Good night.
Bye-bye.